Yeah, I was like, I think I was more excited about, oh my god, my key title Gorano coming out of the jungle, out of the jungle. This is how but I went for something really sensible because, yeah.
For many years, thousands of Nepalis have been moving overseas with the hopes of a better education, job, and lifestyle. Some find success in conventional fields, while some carve their own paths. Who is to say one is better than the other? Success is a journey, not a destination. So come on this journey with me, where we connect with our Nepali communities living overseas and explore their conventional and unconventional paths. My name is Sankalpa Gurung, and this is Hamro Yatra.
And welcome to our first ever episode of Hamro Yatra. To make this even more exciting, we have the one and only Lex Limbu joining us today. Lex started out as a blogger when he was 15 as an outlet to share his opinions. At 21, he founded Tracing Nepal, a platform to connect Nepalese living overseas with Nepal and give back to the local communities. He is courageous, isn't afraid to go after what he wants, and has been breaking societal barriers since then. In this episode, we will explore his journey from life before blogging and what makes him the Lex Limbu we all know. Hi, Lex. Welcome to Hamro Yatra. Thank you for joining us today, and especially our very first episode. It's a privilege to have you with us.
Well, thank you so much for reaching out and having me on this show. To be the first person, it's quite exciting. And I guess you caught me at the right time while everything is kind of going on with coronavirus. So, yeah. Gives me something to do as well.
I guess we could start with some fun questions just to get started.
Okay.
So what superpower would you want and what would you do with it?
A superpower, I would love to fly. I don't want to be a bird. I just want to be a human who has the ability to fly, so I could just go to so many places and cover so many things. Yeah.
And if you could have any cuisine for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh, people might dislike me for this, but it would just have to be like American fast food, which is, I guess,
controversial.
American fast food, which is a copy of, I guess, all the world cuisines. So, yeah, yep. I could happily live on pizzas and burgers and chips. Yeah.
Yeah. Ditto. Growing up, my mom used to tell me that, oh, you're the kere pailo janma ma kere gorako family ma thiyo ki, because like all I wanted to have was like potatoes and burgers and like pizzas, bhat khayo bhane, I'd be like, oh, I'm not hungry, like I wouldn't eat.
Oh my god. Okay, so that there's something common between us. Right up there.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you could go back to one Nepali like historical moment, what would that be?
That's really a really interesting question. I guess I would like to have lived around 1980s. And I know this doesn't seem like a really far off period, but the reason being, I think it was only around 1990 when some form of democracy came into Nepal, right? So I think it would have been really interesting because by the 1980s, Nepal was being connected to so many different countries in the world. And it would have been interesting to live as a Limbu person with that kind of outside information, but trying to do something within Nepal to create your own space, to kind of exercise your voice. I think that would have been a very, I guess, a powerful time. So not too far, but I guess that just goes to show that so much that has happened for, I guess, in our own communities and groups in Nepal has been so recent as well. So. That's it, really.
Well, people know you as a blogger, an activist, an influencer even, right? But who was Lex Limbu before all of this happened? How were you as a child?
As a child, I was quite loud. I was very mean. I was very rude. I was just somebody who would be talking to a lot of people at once and kind of here and there and everywhere. And I think that's a reflection of my childhood and growing up in a lot of different areas because of my dad's job. So that's it, really. And I think that kind of just took shape and I just kind of evolved into... And I think that's why as a blogger, I do have... Well, I used to have a lot of opinions and project them widely, but now I'm learning to kind of you know, only share as when it's needed, etc. But yeah.
So there's been a shift, yeah. I guess, from when you started to how things are now.
Yeah, definitely. And as you do more, as you say more, and I've been very lucky that I think in terms of the connections that I've built with, they've been with people of really different age groups as well, from teenagers to people who are like my parents' age and so on, from academics and so on. So I think I've kind of realized that, you know, it's not just me talking to somebody or talking to the internet. Now I kind of have to be more responsible for the kind of views that I put out.
Yeah.
So kind of really having to think about it, which kind of just takes away the fun of social media. Because when I did come into this whole blogging scene as a 15, 16 year old, it's just a case of, oh, I think so and so did this, or I didn't like what somebody wore, or this film was crap. But now, you know, you kind of have to
be more responsible a little
think
bit.
About it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I definitely want to delve a lot more into like the whole blogging, how that came into. But before that as well, moving into UK, like from Nepal and having that experience there, how has that shaped you into who you are now?
It's a question that I think it's very difficult for me to answer. But I came to the UK with my family back in 2000. So that was 20 years ago. And even before that, I was living with my parents in Brunei. So let's say I was born in Nepal, but at the age of two, I moved with my mom to join my dad in Brunei.
Right.
So in that sense, like I never really had something to compare with in terms of kind of the change. But as a young kid in 1999, getting excited to move to the UK, I was hugely excited because of, you know, UK was that kind of country where my dad used to come back to Brunei and bring lots of sweets and tell us about all the stories and stuff like that. So I think I was like, you know, and when you're young, you don't really counter or factor the differences and all that. So I think it was just, I was just really excited about everything. And I think growing up as a young person in the UK in the early 2000s was a complete different experience to what I'm guessing what it's like for primary school students right now.
Mm-hmm. How was growing up in London in the UK being someone who's a minority?
I actually only moved to London with my family in 2010. Mm-hmm. So before that, it was always living in smaller towns and communities in the UK. And the first area that we actually moved into was Aldershot, which is now a home to a lot of Nepalese people. But because it's a military town, there was, quite a few Nepalese people in my school. So that in that sense, it wasn't tough. I think the tough part was language, because to know English is one thing, but to be able to have that confidence and just speak freely to somebody else is another. But thankfully, I picked it up quite soon. And quite fast. And, you know, at that time, and I think I go back to the previous point that I mentioned, though I knew that I'm Nepalese and I have a different language, there's that different culture and the way that we do things are different. I never felt that made me different in my class, in my year groups. And thankfully, in that time, the people there, they didn't make me feel different as well.
Yeah.
So I think that was really good. So, and it was only later as I kind of progressed onto secondary school. And once you become a teenager, that's when I think you start recognizing things.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not too sure if as a young kid, it wasn't there or my ability to differentiate things hadn't quite developed. So that's one question there already. But as a teenager, once you start thinking about, once you start seeing things, because I think around 2007 and 8, YouTube and Facebook and that started kind of happening. That's when I kind of felt like, you know what? And whatever was happening in UK in terms of EU migrants and everything that was taking place. And I think that all kind of created this, you started kind of recognizing that some of the same very friends that you had were being very different in terms of their behavior and reaction to certain groups. So I think it was mainly around my teenage years as a 14, 15-year-old that I kind of felt like, whoa, things are, you know, some people can be very, very mean. But as a young person, I actually had a very, I guess, a simple and easy upbringing, thankfully.
Yeah. And I guess that's the case with a lot of kids as well. Like when they grow up, they're very ignorant of everything that's been happening, like societal wise, right? It's only when they start growing up and start seeing in media or like hearing people talk, they start like getting to, oh, like we're not the same. So it is good to see that when you were a kid, you were in that little safe place to like grow and have your own opinions. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what got you into starting your blog? Like you were 15, 14 years old and you've started such a big platform. Like, did you envision your blog turning into what it is now when you started?
No, I didn't. I was just a bored 15-year-old who had a bit too much free time. And I used to read a lot of entertainment blogs, American mainly. And so I think it was basically out of all of that, I just thought, okay, cool. You know what? Within the Nepali kind of circle, there weren't as many people writing about Nepali celebrities, music, or entertainment in English at that time. Obviously, Cyber Nepal and Cyber Sansar was there, but I think the way that they wrote was more from a kind of information and factual level rather than kind of putting opinions attached to it.
Yeah.
So that's why I started it. And I was quite interested at that time because what happened was my parents took me back to Nepal for 2 years between 2004 and 2006, and I had a huge struggle adjusting to living in Nepal and getting used to things. And also the language was a huge thing. But like, I obviously know how to speak Nepali, but the thing was a lot of my relatives and cousins used to make fun of me because of my, it wasn't even like a funny accent, but like little certain things. And I think all I did was, the school that I went to wasn't really helpful because it was a school for predominantly people who come from outside of Nepal. And I just forced myself to watch so many Nepali films and listen to Nepali songs. And at that time, there weren't really a great deal of Nepali films. They were all like so sad and it was all about like poverty. And I watched a lot of them. And then I was like, oh my God, some of them are like really good, really decent. And I felt like I kind of understood the country through watching all these like really melodramatic films. And then later on, I was like, that's so sad that there's not really like English content talking about these movies or actors like Nijuta Singh, Deepana Thapa. And these are like, you know, actors from that era.
OG.
Exactly, right? And so yeah, that's how it happened. And I enjoyed it in the initial stage. Nobody really read anything because, you know, young people like... Okay. At that time, young people like myself, they wouldn't even watch Nepali films. So who on earth would read about it, you know? So I guess like, but I enjoyed it and I just kept doing it. And here we are. I mean, I think even though I don't really blog much these days, but it kind of, that's how I'm defined by as, you know, the blogger. So so it's really nice because it's like, I just never really expected any of this.
Yeah. When you started the blog and you did it because you saw there was like a gap in the market because you wanted to like sort of promote Nepalese like actresses or movies and different to the culture itself. And you said like not a lot of like young people at that time were like even interested in watching those or like let alone like reading about that, right? So what made you still continue with what you did like really persistently and like go for it?
I always find it sad when you want to search for something on Google, but it's not there. Because I always feel like if 20 years later, you know, somebody else was like, wait, did this ever happen in Nepal? And if they Google it, but there isn't that result, then I just feel like somebody could have created that. So it's like half the things that I read like lots of, I guess, books that aren't, you know, super popular, etc. and so on. But I feel like I'm just going to write it on my blog. And even if no one reads it, there must be somebody later on who's going to research into who were the women who first climbed or tried to climb Mount Everest. Obviously, we know Pasang Lamu Sherpa, but we might not know about the other women who didn't quite make it, you know? And I was just reading a book recently, and I was just like, oh my God, I just need to put it. And because I then later went on Google and I searched her name, but there was nothing there.
Yeah.
And those kind of things. And for me, I think it's because of that. You know, let's leave some... I guess the internet is our... it's our wall right now.
It's like our vault of knowledge.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's what I do. So I guess I'm taking a lot of space on the internet, but I'm just like, whatever I find interesting and I think this might be, you know, interesting, then I'm just going to put it up on the blog and creator, and not necessarily caring, because back then, going to watch a Nepali film or talking about, you know, the Nepali people that you know or Nepali films that you know would be quite embarrassing. Mm. It's like, oh, Nepali company, so that's so, you know, so laz lagdo huncha khalko pani hotai hunthyo ni ta. Ani, but I would still be like, okay, but still, bhanne khalko. And now I think it's interesting because, you know, something will be embarrassing until it becomes cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not sure if it's cool yet, but I can definitely see that there's been drastic changes within Nepali cinema and so on. So, you know, and you just have to create your own cool. Yeah.
When you said, like, about watching Nepali movies, like, the first thing that came to my mind was, because I grew up in Nepal, we went to watch, like, Saturday, Sunday, Purate movie hall, Mayanujani, like, Line Lagera and everything. And I remember this movie, I don't even remember the name, but I remember there was this song in there.
Uh-huh.
Where the girl's name was called Arunima.
Arunima Langsao, yeah.
And that song was like, Arunima ma timilai maya or something. And then like that song was like just stuck in my head. And I was like, Arunima, oh my God, that's like the best name ever. And my mom was pregnant at that time. And like I came home and I was like, because before then I was telling my mom, I want a brother. Like, unsani malai bhai deo, malai bhai le rai deo khalko. And then after that movie came out and I watched that movie and I was like, came home like, mommy, no, I changed my mind. Like, I want a baini now and we're going to call it Arunima. Like, completely obsessed. Wow, like, I was just like dance and singing it all the time.
That's amazing. That's really good.
So I guess from like your blog when you're 15, 16, then starting Tracing Nepal, how did that come about?
So with Tracing Nepal, it was just a really exciting thing. And in Nepal, I think even when I lived with my parents for 2 years at that time, and even before, my parents used to always, well, it's in Nepal, and they would actually take us to the villages that where they were born. I know, Ani. So that's like in Taplejung, and that's quite far. And we always had like a nice kind of insight into Nepal, from like the fun parts to like the gaon gharune, and kind of getting that kind of exposure and understanding of the journeys that they made to be where they are today. So tyo, and thankfully, my parents and in my own personal family trips to Nepal, we always did like really fun things. We went to like nice places to go hang out to, and so it wasn't just like going to Nepal and getting stuck at some at a relative's house and having like that, you know, the same dal bhat like 3 or 4 times a day, but out of respect because, you know, of their generosity. So I always enjoyed going to Nepal, but I realized that a lot of young people like myself growing up in the UK, they would look at Nepal as like, oh, Nepal ma gayo bhane ta kehi pani garna paudaina. Suddenly, like, the cousins and the uncle aunts, they become so overprotective because, you know, you've just come from outside and somebody might rob you and whatnot.
Take advantage of you.
And plus, Nepal, and obviously the worries, you know, that's fine. But then, obviously, you just have to be, you just kind of have to do it as well, Nita. And also, I guess a lot of people lacked knowing where to go, where were the fun spots, which is slightly different to now, because now there's social media and there's excessive amount of places that you can go to. Especially 2011 was Nepal Tourism Year 2011 back then. And I got a group of 19 people from Nepali people from Canada, UK, Manchester, to everywhere. So all of them kind of knew me or did not know me, but I didn't know some of them, but I just knew that they were like kind of safe people. So I created a 10-day trip across like Kathmandu, Gorkha, Pokhara, Gandruk, Lumbini, and I had such a great experience creating this kind of travel for these individuals, right? And then I just thought, okay, cool. Now let me do something like this to somebody who actually has even more little experience of Nepal, right, now, or an idea of what it entails to like travel in Nepal, and then combine an element of doing good, you know, a social action. Because the initial 2011 trip was completely just travel only. So 2014, we wanted to do something like that. And the more... Oh my God, this answer has just become so big.
That's all right.
Anyways, I'm so sorry. And then the other thing that I realized was there are so many nonprofits and charities in Nepal that are already doing good work. And because I was involved and had supported quite a few of them, I felt that rather than, you know, rather than creating your own organization, a charity, and doing something, I may as well just select a few good charities and then continue some sort of a partnership with them. So in that sense that we're financially supporting them and also bringing some form of, I don't know, resources, whether that's people, minds, or creative ideas and so on. So that's how Tracing Nepal essentially started, for young people like myself growing up outside of Nepal to reconnect in one way or the other, or just discover. For some people, it might be rediscover, or some people, it's discovering for the first time, because they've never really had that experience of kind of growing up in Nepal. So that's how Tracing Nepal started in 2014.
How old were you when you got this going?
I was, I think, 21.
That is like mind-boggling to me, because at 21, when you have ideas like this, like to get the ball rolling and actually get people involved, did you have any fears or any challenges? Because it's such a massive deal. Like, and then to make it more like not just about fun and travel, to also then make it more socially responsible and like help the communities around. That's a lot of undertaking for like a 21-year-old, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now that I think about it, I definitely feel like, oh yeah, that was. But at that time, my only intention was that we do something very responsible in terms of we're doing things where we're not going into an organization and disrupting them. Right? So that was my biggest concern, but as the years went down and through experience, there were more bigger concerns like safety and health and safety. And then in case this happens and that happens, and obviously, in 2015, there was the earthquake. Thankfully, our trip ended just before the earthquake. But all those kind of like, oh my goodness, you know, I need to have all this kind of plan B and C's and et cetera. But they add up. But I think I was just, I've always been that kind of person who, if I really want to do something, I want to do it like now. Or can I, like, I just have to do it within a year. So त्यो भएर होला त्यो त्यो थियो, and I never felt like it was something out of my ability, भनौँ न. So that's why it wasn't such a huge thing. But yeah. So it's like the obviously through since I started blogging, I've been fortunate enough to receive a lot of cool things to do and opportunities, etc. But I think creating Tracing Nepal with my co-founder, which is Chandrika. Chandrika mainly supports with all the background work. That's been like the most exciting thing, and I think one which I'm really, really proud of.
But. Yeah, and you should be, like, it's an amazing work, and like the whole the framework behind it as well. I think it'd be okay for me to say that you've already achieved so much by like your blogs, like having Tracing Nepal, and I see that you even went to school to do your bachelor's and master's.
Yeah.
So even after like having your career or some achievements already in your pocket, what made you go after education? Pretty bachelor's material, you know, you went for master's as well. Like, what's the reasoning behind it?
Well, I think I was always interested in studying, but I must add that. So I finished my undergrad back in 2013, and then I had my 1 year kind of gap year. But in that 1 year in Nepal, that was when I was kind of volunteering for different places. I was interning, and then that's when the first Tracing Nepal also started. And I also got to travel to so many different areas in Nepal, from like Mechi to Mahakali, to really, really small communities and so on. And what I studied, I think for a lot of people, there's that kind of study, the course that they're studying doesn't quite fulfill them, or they feel like it's not their purpose. But I've always felt divided, because I've always enjoyed studying geography, studying about human development or lack of development. But then I've always felt like, oh gosh, there's a whole blog side. And then that's now becoming more, I was at a time growing more distant from it, because a lot of the things that I discussed about the blog, discussed on the blog, was all kind of, you know, light, superficial things, you know, just fun things and stuff like that. But then, and then what I was studying, it was a lot more different, right? And I think along the way, I was kind of thinking, how can I kind of bridge the gap? You know, how can I now start talking about different content on my blog that more reflects me as a person, or the person that's growing up right now, rather than just talking about fashion designers and who wore what sort of clothes, which was primarily and beauty pageants, which was primarily how, I guess, my blog became quite big initially. So yeah, I was always interested in studying. And then when I did go to Nepal after my undergrad, I met so many more people who were so amazing at what they were doing. And they have years of studying behind them. They have masters, they have PhD and everything, right? So I just kind of thought, okay, so in Nepal, the baseline of studying is not undergrad, it's masters. And I never wanted to study again after doing my undergrad. But and then after that whole year in Nepal, I just realized, you know what, if I've done 3 years of undergrad, what's 1 year going to take? And then finally, I felt like as a person, I was finally at a more receptive stage in my life to receive the education that was being given and imparted as well. And I did my tourism, environment and development. That was the course, masters. And I felt that really combined the idea of how tourism, right, if that has the ability to bring development, right? And I thought that was like amazing, because essentially that's what Tracing Nepal wants to do. It wants to like get these people to go to Nepal so they pay, and then whatever that they pay can support the existing charities and so on, etc. So I really enjoyed that course. And yeah, I mean, you just kind of have to, I mean, it's a lot of balancing and being clear with priorities, and also being being patient with yourself regarding the pace that it takes for you to kind of get to your desired destination. Yeah.
I guess education means more than just employment for you.
Yes, definitely. I agree. Like, even though I've got my, even though I've studied up to, you know, getting my master's and so on, I feel like education takes a bigger shape outside of the kind of school, outside of school. And I think because I've been lucky enough to kind of travel or just meet so many interesting people, that I've realized that education comes from a kind of wide range of things. But for, unfortunately, you know, in terms of society and depending on what sort of job that you want in the future, there will be that kind of inherent pressure that, you know, ideally, it would be good if you were educated up to this level in terms of, you know, institutional education and so on. So sometimes you kind of have to think about that as well. And as a, you know, a Nepalese young person, and I think this pressure is not just present for young Nepalese people, but even, you know, young people here as well. People tend to expect you to have been to university, you know, because that's something that comes up in conversations quite a lot. But so that's why I kind of completed it, because after like 2 years, after my second year at uni, I kind of really wanted to stop studying, because I felt like, no, I don't think studying is for me. But then it was almost a case of, but you know what, if I'm like doing okay, then I might as well just do it. I mean, I'm one of those people, I always think there's 24 hours in a day. If I'm only having to go to uni for about 3 hours, then I can definitely do the other stuff in those another 3 hours anyway. So in essence, a person can actually be doing multiple things at once. So I think that's how I tend to look at it.
One of the things that really stood out to me from your journey was the video you put out, I think it was 2018, about you coming out to your family and like actually including your mom in that as well. When I saw that, I had to watch it a few times. Mm-hmm. I was crying entire thing. I sent it to all my friends, even if they didn't speak Nepalese, because it was just something that, like, I think spoke to a lot of people, even though they weren't going through the same thing as yourself. For me, because I married an Australian guy. Uh-huh. And in my family, like, that's like a big taboo, right? So, like, when that came up and I confronted my parents about it, like, we had a lot of disagreements within our family. And, like, some of the family members are still not speaking to me. Like, I've been with my husband for 5 years now.
Yeah.
Like, seven years now. Uh-huh. So, when I saw, like, how your mom was, the way that she phrased everything in that video, she was more careful about what you would be going through.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And that was amazing. It was more so like a great example of what unconditional love is.
Yeah. I think, well, thank you for watching that and kind of sharing that all around. And I'm so glad that you kind of shared from your kind of own experience as well, because a lot of people, after that video came out, and I thought it was really important to have my parents involved in the video. And my dad was obviously in the UK at that time, so that's why he wasn't part of the video. And I really wanted to bring my mom in to make it a kind of two-way journey, because it's not just going to be about you, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people who reached out to me were people who have been through really, really difficult circumstances, or and like yourself, whether it's someone who's married somebody from a different country or of a different caste group, or a situation where they felt that their parents didn't quite stand up for them or support them. And that could be in a lot of minor to kind of major situations as well. And I think that part really was something that a lot of people kind of took. I must say, like, you know, I've been very lucky, and my parents have been very, very supportive. So, yeah.
Have things changed since the video for you?
No, not really. Everything's kind of been the same. But I must say, like, I think what has changed is that video has definitely opened me to a lot more people of kind of different mm-hmm. ages, and people who work in different kind of settings. So a lot of, I think, you know, there might be that worry for people who would be like, if you now share that you're either lesbian or gay or bi, or you're with somebody else, people might kind of shun you from society and so on. But I think for me, and I guess my case is quite different, it kind of opened me up to more things, more opportunities, and I've been very grateful for that. So, and I think it wouldn't have happened had I not done it, if that makes sense. Like, I've been invited to, like, go and speak at various different places, and, you know, people are like, oh, such an exemplary youth and so on. I don't really tend to think of it like that, because I just feel like I just shared what I needed to share.
Like, you were just being you.
Yeah, and then, and I guess, you know, it just kind of goes to show, which is quite saddening, that, you know, it's not as easy for everyone.
For me, when I watched the video, the first thing that I thought of was, like, you're very brave. Mm-hmm. Right, to, like, be open about it, not with just your parents, but with the whole world. Like, you put something on internet, like, the whole world watches it, and, like, it's something that takes a lot of guts. And for you, it could just be, like, the person you are, and it doesn't seem like a big deal. But I think for everyone, you've made such a big impact on everyone watching the video, that, like, I think we're all grateful for you putting it out there.
Oh my God, I loved making the video, because, you know, there was no plan to make a video. There was no plan to make a video, but what happened was there was a plan to go to the places. So we went to Bardia National Park, and we went to Suklafat National Park. And I had wanted to go to these places so badly, because I want to see a tiger in the wild. And I've been to, like, all these national parks so many times, but I've never seen a tiger in the wild, right? And then I thought, okay, so if I'm going to go all the way to the far west and west part of Nepal, I may as well do something. And then I thought, I got in touch with somebody, and I said, oh, listen, we're going to do a video. I'm going to, like, tell the world that, you know, this is me and stuff. And even quite a few other people who were there, like my friends, they had no idea what I was doing. And I was just like, let's go to the riverbank and let me kind of start speaking right now. And then they're like, eh? And so it's like, sometimes,
let me look out into the vast open river, like, and you film me from behind.
No, honestly, yeah, because I obviously, you know, even though you saw that here, this ribane, but I made all work with the here that video, and I saw a lot of people, like, in their own rooms, like, in this kind of scenario, and talking to the camera, halko, you know, and initially, about, if I have to talk about it, I never felt like more than about middle sexual orientation about it, so bala bhannu parcha bhanne pani laeko thiye na, because the life that I have, and I guess for a gay man, some of our experiences are so much more different than somebody who is a transgender woman or a transgender man, because they're much more visible, and the prejudices they face are so much more challenging. In terms of my younger self, I was kind of, like, out there and whatever anyway. So I never felt I had to come out. But then that 1 year living in Nepal as well, and meeting so many different people, and realizing that, you know, people were really getting confused in terms of general public regarding what on earth LGBT, the terminology, mean, and how to unpack that. So I thought, I definitely felt like there is a big need for a lot of representation to come across. So that's why I was like, okay, cool, you know what, let me just do this, create it, and put it out there. But I didn't want just, like, a simple video. I was like, I go on, like, you know, I'm traveling here and there, I may as well utilize this and make like a really nice video.
The gist of the video, it was almost like you were free.
Yeah.
Because like you were out in the wild, like the forest, the river with nature.
Oh,
and it just seemed like, wow, like, you know, that's like, that's the feeling you're getting and the vibe you're sending out as well. So
yeah, I was
awesome.
Like, I think I was more excited about, oh my God, Mariki title, Gorano, coming out of the jungle with this dog. But I went for something really sensible because, yeah, they are. But yeah.
All right. So in the 27 years that you've had different milestones, right? From the blogger to your organization to studying as a son, as a friend, as a brother. What does success mean to you?
Success, I think for me, has always meant like feeling good. I think feeling good is success. And I think that probably oversimplifies things a bit much, but I think I try not to think too much about things and so on. And that's it really, just being happy at whatever and wherever you are at that moment. And I think that's when you kind of feel like, okay, cool. You know, this moment or this time right now is a successful period in my life. And that's it really. I'm not kind of attaching it to anything because then it can kind of get challenging.
Yeah. Because I think when we're growing up, you sort of attach success with either buying a house or being a doctor, engineer, or and if you're neither of those things, then you're like, shit, like, so all the things I've done, like, sort of doesn't really account to something.
Yeah. And I you know, the more you kind of attach things to goals or, you know, limited by time and an age, you know, there's never a guarantee that that's going to happen or, you know, that it is going to happen by a desired time. So I feel like for me, success is just about like these, you know, really intangible things. This sounds so wishy-washy, but it's like, you know, how you make somebody else feel. Okay? And I think that's what I've been trying to do now, like whether it's through my blog, you know, sharing good stories or sharing stories that bring somebody else's stories, whether it's sometimes bad stories to make people feel much more kind of woken up about the world, through Tracing Nepal, like sometimes it's so challenging, you know, but if you imagine in 2014 as a 21-year-old person who's quite young anyway to look after 18-19-year-olds who have very limited experience of Nepal, some and it's like a young person looking after another young person, okay? And it does get quite challenging, but at the end of it, it's kind of like, you know, you've just created something and given somebody an experience that now, you know, they'll kind of have ever in their life. And I just thought, wow, that's so amazing. Mm. You know, I created this feeling and now we still have those kind of get togethers and so on. And aside from this and the blog and stuff, I work for a charity in the UK as well. So I kind of like have that job. And I think with the charity as well, I've always worked in the charity sector in terms of my jobs outside of university. So I love the ability that, you know, I'm trying so hard to create and bring opportunities to people who have, you know, different learning disabilities living across the UK and to make sure that, you know, we create these like incredible moments. So I think, and I think that's the connection that I've been able to bring in my life, that whatever, I think that's my joy and that's what I find success in.
That's amazing to hear as well. So I guess, would you consider yourself successful?
Yes, because by doing all of that...
I love it!
It makes me happy and I feel like, you know, that's it. And I feel like, I think a lot, you know, what I talk about death a lot. So, this is really funny because my mom's always like, I always say, and then obviously now with everything that's going on as well, we've had this conversation again, and I always say to friends and family, like, obviously there's always like these big ones in our life, you know, by 35 I would love to have like a house with this or drive this, I know a few kids and so on, but also, you know, those dreams and goals can always remain there, but also think about if in the event that you were told that you are going to die like in 2 months time or 1 week's time, try to live a life where you don't have that, oh my God, you thought garnu parne tara, I had just put it off. Okay. And I think that helps you and has definitely helped me think about the things that I want to share to people the things that I want to say. And so I think living like that has, I think it makes me like really happy. And yeah, that's it really. And that's how I try to live.
So I guess not trying to be morbid or anything, but if something did happen to you tomorrow, then you'll be like, I've done everything I could. Like, I'm happy.
Exactly. Yeah, right? Definitely. And I think obviously, you know, for me just to be able to say this is just like, you know, I have the support. I live in a country which is a lot more easy to kind of, you know, do everything and so on. So I understand that, you know, it might not be as easy for a lot of people. But at the same time, it is something that a lot of us can do as well.
Yeah, so there you go. Definitely. To wrap things up as well, Lex, if you could give some advice to someone who is far away from home and is sort of struggling to find their path, right? Regardless of if it's like a conventional one or they're trying to carve their own paths, what would your advice be?
My advice simply would be for you to do a lot more self-reflection, kind of just sit down and think about all the things that you enjoy, things that you do not enjoy, the type of person that you are in terms of your personality, your ability to kind of be out there or be indoors. And I think that should kind of help you. The more you understand yourself first, the easier it becomes for you to kind of assess and reflect where you fit in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important because somewhere, somehow, a lot of us kind of avoid asking ourselves a difficult question. And I think once we kind of get past that, everything will just kind of align, or you will be determined enough to get that thing that you really want or need to be in. So that's it really. And then just sometimes just don't take things too seriously as well. Just enjoy life. And I guess that's it really.
Thank you again so much for your time. Like, I had an absolute blast. Like, you only see different facets of your life, but then just getting to have this opportunity to delve into deeper and just share a few laughs as well. Like, this was really fun. Thank you.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me on this very first podcast. Take care. Bye.
Yeah, we do.
If you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did, then please share with your friends and family. Show us some love on Instagram by taking a screenshot of this episode, tag at hamro.yathra with what you took away from the episode. I would love to hear from you. Until next time.